We are back, 9:14 here on this Monday morning. JR, Simmer is back alongside Hammer, and we're here until 10 o'clock this morning. Spent lots of time with Simmer talking about his, what would you call your last 4 weeks? Sojourn?
Pretty much a vacation, to be quite honest with you. I was actually in Jamaica, but made up a tremendous backstory while staying out of the sun.
Hey, Simmer, thanks for your vulnerability and honesty, man. I have had anxiety since I was 16 and had to take a break from work like you recently and focused on me and a much better place with meds and routine. Keep at it, and you got lots of people around you who love you, and keep being you, man. Take care. That's from Maddie.
Yeah,
from New Orleans. So I'm not sure if Maddie is from New Orleans, like New Orleans, Louisiana, or he's from Tentline and
Innis,
and Innis.
Anything further than
New
that, you're right. Yeah,
Orleans.
I had to get my head around on South Chapel Hill. I'm like, there's another part of Chapel Hill, and I'll summarize this without going too deep, JR. From 17 years old, I'm gonna say the number. The summer was 1985, JR. Let's take us back to a young Sean Simpson. Go to the OHL draft in May. At that time, previously, I was a teenager, living with my parents, playing hockey, going to school. I was just a teenager. From the day I got drafted in the Ontario Hockey League, I no longer had rules because I was cool. I had been drafted. And quite simply, as I pedaled out to the Sioux that year, JR, and was incredibly overwhelmed, it quite simply, and at times in my life, I have self-medicated myself. It is that simple. You know, I mean, you have to find something. And, you know, the ups and downs, a hockey life and everything else. So that's kind of the mark I look back, guys, for anybody out there. First of all, I believe in the meds. But for most people, you're finding a way, and it's probably not the right way, and it's certainly not going to take you to a better place.
Do you think that you were born with the vulnerabilities that you have just recently tried to take care of, or do you think that they have developed? Like, I guess I'm asking about nature versus nurture.
Yeah, no, it's a really interesting conversation, JR. I'm going to say a bit of a combo, and I'll say that I was a person that, based on being adopted, broken family, being a goaltender, I never had a lot of confidence, to be quite honest with you. Like, as a goaltender, that was something I struggled with, and with that came anxiety. I'm going to say in my particular case that it's a combo pack, but certainly the path I've taken in my life, which I can't get enough of, being in sports, which is a risky proposition, working in media, talking to somebody the other day, they're like, we should have just taken government jobs. But I'm like, well, we're not built like that, you know, no matter how vulnerable it makes you feel. So I, at least for me, JR, I'll say a little bit of a combination of that. That's all, you know, but it's really, I think for anybody that struggles, I think it's a really interesting question, but there's no doubt that environment and path that I've taken and, you know, like I say, moving away at a young age and just lots of other things. Everyone has pressure points in their life, but I will say this isn't something like it just appeared. Like I can tell you, I can go back to probably 10 years old, 12 years old, once I became a teen, and everybody has those insecurities, but you know, we're talking about a solid 40 years of without a doubt having a lot of those same things that did the same effect as a kid, whether it was staying home and not going out for a sports team or being nervous about being in a locker room. They're all the same feelings that I've dealt with my entire life, without a doubt.
Yeah, it's just that you don't, you know, especially when you're younger, right? Either you don't recognize it or you don't want to recognize it.
Well, and also as a teenager, at least when I lived, you know, hey, our summer back, JR, when we were kids, end of school year, see you next fall with other people. Like, you could go home. I didn't, you know, nobody's calling you on the telephone. You know, there's no communication. There was nothing going on. You're just kind of in your own little world, right? Now, if you get out and play sports, that certainly helped. You know, we all find our way to kind of go into the safety spot. And the other part that I realized when I needed to get some help here, I was taking the easiest route in my life. That's where I realized from a fitness standpoint, from the way I was taking care of myself, how much time I was spending with Mira. You know, I was taking all of the kind of, oh, well, you know, I got to be up early. Hey, man, there's lots of time here. This is an incredible job. I'm asked to come here at 5:30. I leave at 10:30. No matter how early I'm getting, a simple nap, a little exercise, there's a lot more I can accomplish with my life. But it was easy to make those excuses. And quite simply, I made them for way too long.
Good morning, boys. I've been listening in and out a bit this morning. Just want to say welcome back, Simmer. Like many regular listeners, we missed your presence. I hope all of you had a restful weekend, and let's power through this week. So there we go.
Yeah.
Good advice indeed. Final week of the Sens regular season. Final game coming up on Wednesday. And I put this out on the weekend, and I truly believe this.
Yeah.
And I never would, would want to wish away a summer. But if you were ever to thinking about a time in which you wanted to advance time, this may be the 1 year, right? First of all, as we advance time quickly, hopefully, most importantly for all of us, pandemic closer to what we hope will be the end, or at least some resolution to the fact that we can open up somewhat or a lot or at one point all the way. First and foremost, most important thing by far.
Yeah.
Secondly, if you're an Ottawa Senator fan, if you're a player, any member of the organization.
Yeah.
You can't wait until October.
Absolutely.
Based on how this season has come to its conclusion.
Yeah.
Other than last night.
No, I agree, Jerry. And without that, you know, I kind of look at some practical things with the Sens, but that top line, the Stützle going through the rest, guys coming through the system, another high draft pick, without a doubt. And I also believe, and again, no, not a people financially, certainly things in different industries have been affected by, but there's also a lot of things that point to, both here in Ottawa and nationally, you know, the economy has responded a little bit quicker, that on the other side of this and the ability to have some freedom, you know, is that going to be a real positive when it comes to a sports standpoint? And the timing for the Senators to kind of reopen the shop, try to reinvigorate the sponsors and the season ticket people and whatever, and I think a lot of people have parked some other emotions, people quite simply have fallen back in love with the team, you know, and that's the most important part. I mean, hey, you're asking and you want them to support and spend their money. A lot of people right now are looking past and can't help but on a nightly basis watching that top line and Stützle and a lot of other people and just say, man, I cannot wait, based on life and based on everything else, to go back to an ice hockey match and be out cheering and enjoying time at the CTC. Like you said, I can't come soon enough. And hopefully, timing-wise, will be perfect. We're a society. We are open again.
All right. You threw out a projected lineup for next season, the one you put out on the weekend.
You
labeled it Cup Team in the Future.
Yeah,
so I don't know whether that means this one to start next season or more down the road.
No, I had some mixed messaging on my stuff as I was going through a JR. One, I kind of put together a defense by next spring. I put together what I think they have to address or I'm not positive about for next year. And then I put out the one, just having some fun with Sokolov and kind of going through and realizing, you know, if you did almost nothing, would you look at that group and say, hey, they could have a chance to win a Stanley Cup, which I knew. There's some other pieces that have to be refined, but kind of looked at it and said, hey, you know, for most teams that have tried to rebuild, everybody wants the next guy and the top center and the defenseman. If you looked at it for what's internally right now, Jerry, you'd say, wow, that's actually one hell of a group.
Okay, I want to go through three players in particular on this list. Colin White, Erik Brännström, and Filip Gustavsson.
Yeah, for sure.
So let's start with Brännström
because
in the, you know, 4 weeks you've been away as the team has played better. He has, I think we can all agree he's played better. He's looked better.
Yeah. Why wasn't he playing all year is kind of the funny part you always go back and ask.
To the point where a lot of people are saying, okay, general manager has said as recently as this season on this station, Erik Brännström is a top four defenseman in the National Hockey League. Yeah. You are still kind of going against the grain
of those that are
looking very positively about Erik Brännström for next year and down the road. You're still not seeing a top four defenseman?
Oh, God, no. No, I don't, JR, and it won't happen for me. And as I said, somebody said yesterday, you're locked in. I think people know me well enough. And when I look at a line, I assess for short term and long term. I've been consistent in saying this. When Erik Brännström, I said last year, if he stays healthy, he'll play in the National Hockey League. He'll be a decent player. A little bit of this is understanding where this team wants to go. But I think, and one of the mistakes I made when I'm scouting, and I'm not saying a lot of people out there don't know what they're talking about, you tend to focus when a player has a puck all the time, right? You kind of watch that.
Mm-hmm.
I just quite simp, and I'm not. I think he's 5'8", whatever he is, 5'9", whatever. To me, when I look at a player like that, and historically, you have to be basically Kimmo Timonen, where you're an absolute rock-solid defender, a very good skater, a pretty good offensive player. I like Branstrom as far as his hockey sense. I think he's a real smart player. Full marks for a guy that's not afraid to take a hit to make a play. But when I look at the skating, JR, it's just not dynamic enough. I know some people say he's better than Chabot on the playoffs. Well, you know what? Chabot was better than Carlson on the playoffs when he on the power play when he only played 15 minutes. On a smaller player, there's just too many limitations down low. And I don't feel like even with some physical maturation that he's going to be able to overcome that. And I would ask anybody for the dynamics that he brings, what team has ever won a Stanley Cup with that? Now, that doesn't mean he can't play right now, and he's played better. But as far as a top four defenseman, yeah, I just don't see it for where this team wants to go, quite simply.
I want to bring up, and this guy's a name popped into my head. And I'm going on the fact that he was a smallish defenseman who played on a really good team. He was not counted on to be the top guy, but he was a solid guy for a lot of years. And maybe I'm going on a he's nothing similar.
Yeah.
What were your thoughts on Brian Rafalski?
Yeah.
And is Erik Brännström in any way? I'm not saying he's the same player, but he was an offensive guy. Yeah. He's listed here as 5'10" and 200.
Yeah.
I don't know what he actually was in Detroit, whether those numbers are right or not. Yeah. But there is a guy who was, you would agree, he was an effective defenseman on that Detroit Red Wings team, right?
Oh, no, again, JR, when he was in New Jersey, he was a star, not a superstar. Brian Rafalski, a couple of things, and again, it's almost like you have to go through each individual. First of all, Brian physically, it's not even close. Like, Brian's ability, I watched Brian play when he went to Helsinki because he came out of University of Wisconsin. They didn't feel he was big enough. Same as Kimmo Timonen. L.A. drafted him. Nobody thought he could play. Their ability to defend is not even close. I'll say with Jared Spurgeon, I don't see where, first of all, and again, 5'10", 200 to what I'm saying is 5'8", 175, and I'm not saying his leverage is bad, JR. Mm-hmm. And the other part, quite simply, Brian Rafalski's defensive feet were elite. Like, they were elite. And Branstrom just doesn't have that. So people throw out comparisons, but no, I do not see him ever being Brian Rafalski.
Right. Okay. All right. That was just a smallish defenseman who I remember back in, again.
Here's a guy that was not a special player, but he turned into a rock solid guy. I'll go with Johnny Oduya. Like I drafted Johnny. I never thought he'd be a player. He got to the Chicago spot, but his whole thing was predicated on being an excellent skater, a very good defender. And to me, that's the big part for Branstrom, JR. Good hockey sense. Good when set up in the zone. I don't think he's great bringing the puck up on the power play, so I don't think that's an elite spot. But I keep going back, and I'll watch him last night. How many times off a simple forecheck is he separated from the puck? And I just think for him, and I know he's 21, I think it's going to be really hard to overcome. And I'll get into matchups in a playoff series. I just don't understand where he'd fit. And people saying lock him down as a top four. Come on, man. Like, I know he's put up a little bit of points here. I think in 110 pro games in the Ottawa system, he's got 6 goals. Now, he's got some nice assists there, but let's not get carried away. And I don't want also, this is the bit of the Bobby Ryan JR, it kind of gets personal. Like, people think you're coming, hey, all I do is give out an opinion. And if he changes next year, I'll also say this. We're putting Mr. Zub right into a territory now where you want to say, and I think you mentioned it with Connor Brown, every player that plays with Connor Brown is better. Well, let's also make a pretty good agreement here that anybody that hops in with Mr. Zub at this point plays much better hockey. And don't look any further than Mr. Riley. So a bit of a factor there. Credit, he's gotten better. But no, I don't see if you're going to the promised land that a guy like that. I just think there's too many liabilities defensively.
So they picked up Victor Mete in the time you were away. I think, right? That was after you, or were you here?
No. It just happened after.
Okay,
so
they brought in Victor Mete. Again, a guy who's come in, and whatever your expectations were, I mean, the team has played good hockey. He seems like he's played reasonably well. I think everybody has reached the same conclusion of, I don't know that you can win in the NHL long-term, playoffs, all that other stuff, having two smallish defensemen, especially guys that play on the same side.
Yeah.
Do you look at Mete to be a better player than Branstrom? If Ottawa were to choose one guy, do you like one better than the other?
Well, here's the interesting part. Branstrom is a better hockey player in a sense of, and here was another name that was brought up, and you almost have to go back. People brought up Mark Street, and I agreed, and I watched Mark. He went to Switzerland, he came back, had a real nice run with the Islanders in Montreal. I look at a player like that was on bad teams and put up points. Mark was not a great fit for the playoffs. Interesting on Mete is that historically I can go back and say, okay, in some third pairings, because he's physically matured, he's got a fresh start. The part with Victor Mete that was a mistake, JR, because he was an elite skater, he was a puck transporter, right? He never had an ability to run a power play, but in junior, you couldn't see that. What I see with him is an elite skater that's gotten stronger, that in a third pairing, I think you'd be fine with. Whereas I said, I don't see where Branstrom unfortunately ends up fitting that. And I know he's a bit younger, but I just put him in a bit of that tweener. So on Mete, I think that's a really nice pickup. And I also look at him, JR, it looks like he's just got a fresh lease on life, right? Do you know what I mean? Like he just looks like, man, for all this stuff in Montreal, I've just come to a spot here, and you watch his skating, and as long as he's smart and simple with the puck and his strength is good enough, man, oh man, he could be a real effective player in that third pairing. Just need the right partner for him.
So if I gave you the choice of the two, you would take Mete?
Yeah, I would. And again, I'm not arguing that in the truest sense, Branstrom is more talented. He'll put up some points. But for where he fits in a lineup, and it's not any higher than the third pairing, I just don't see that as Branstrom. And I also look at this to next spring. I think Sanderson would come right in, personally out of school, and move right into that spot with Zub, and I don't know where you go with Branstrom. And again, I know the fan base is in love and they're protective. There would be, and again, my opinion, timing's everything. If the hockey world is still hot to trot on Eric Branstrom, if I'm Pierre Dorion, I'd be looking at this offseason.
But as you know, general managers, when they go out and make big trades for players, the player they bring in, there is a free agent or whatever, they tend to get a lot more,
or at least a little more rope, right?
And I don't want to say that ego says all with a general manager, but if you come in right now, if you're Pierre Dorion, and it's Eric Branstrom for Mark Stone. Now, I know that as a draft pick and Sokolov, and we'll see what happens with all that, and maybe they recover that part of it turns out to be okay. But right now, it's Branstrom for Stone.
And you didn't know what that second pick was going to be.
No,
do you know what I mean?
Exactly.
So your whole thing.
So credit to Trent Mann for looking like he's picked a good player there. That being said, for Pierre Dorion to turn around this summer and to cut bait on Eric Branstrom, his prized acquisition in a trade for Mark Stone, I just don't see him doing that.
Oh, I don't either. And he has tripled down on his favorite source through the media that this is a building block to the franchise. So I am in full agreement. And the way the season finishes off, and based on most of people's perception, Branstrom's a rock star. So, I totally agree. My thought will be when Sanderson finally leaves school, but I think we could all agree, lock it down right now, that the top six defense, the opening night in the Ottawa Senators, is pretty simple. Shabbat was Zaitsev, Branstrom was Zub, and it's going to end up being Mete with Brown. You'd lock that down.
And that's not good enough, man.
Oh, I know it's not.
That is not good enough.
But I don't see any way that you're going to improve it. And the coach has also gone down the path with Brown. And now that he's pulled the Bobby Bond or whoever that was that played with a broken foot and won the Stanley Cup, he's going to be locked in. And again, this is a bit of the DJ Smith. Like, why Eric Branstrom wasn't playing the whole year is beyond me. And even the reps for Bernard Docker down the road, I know Brown played a little bit better. He's not an NHL player, JR. I mean, give the reps to Bernard Docker. And I thought Bernard Docker on Saturday or earlier in the week, I was a bit scared. I thought each game he's gotten a little bit better.
He looked pretty good last night, I thought.
I thought he's gotten nothing but better. But that first night, you're like, what the hell is this guy sitting on the sideline? But I've been down that road. I've gone to bat for some stinky hockey players back in the day because I've gotten locked in and fallen in love, and you're trying to prove a point. And in the case of Brown, coach likes him. I guess he's supposed to be tough. I'm not sure of beating up. Who did he beat up last week that didn't want to fight him, a little guy? He's on a one-way contract.
He is. Yeah. He is. I don't see that being Ottawa's top six next year. If it is, that's problematic.
What do you see happening?
I really think, and well, this is just my opinion of what they should do. Yeah. I think they need to either make a trade, and as I've said all along, there's going to be players available this offseason because of the expansion draft that in a typical offseason wouldn't be available. Plus, obviously, with cap challenges, etc.
Yeah.
I also think, I also look at a list of a possible free agent. I would like to see them bring in a guy on a 3-year deal that could come in and play with Thomas Chabot. Unfortunately, I think there's going to be some, speaking of recency bias, and I have to give credit because Nikita Zaitsev, I thought, started the year decently, then went into a funk and didn't play well through the middle of the year, and I thought he's played pretty well the last little bit. I have to give credit where credit, in my opinion, credit where credit's due.
Oh, man, he puts it on the line every night, too.
I think that they're going to look at that, and they're going to slot him right in as Thomas Chabot's partner for next year. Yeah. And I think overall, 82 games, that That's not going to work.
Yeah.
It is not. He is not a top pairing defenseman in the NHL.
Yeah.
If you want a challenge for a playoff spot.
Well, and here's a few more points to your point. $4.5 million. I don't think they're sliding him out of that top spot, putting him down in the third pairing. I also think the coach from day one, when DeMello was a better fit with Shabbat, they've gone down this path. So you made your bet on that. You're going to go and give Zuba, I hope, a 5-year contract. Your point on Brännström, lock that down. Victor Mete's come in and played great. Brown's on a one-way contract. I understand what you're saying. All I'm saying is for opening night, I'd be shocked if it's anything but those top six for lots of different reasons.
Well, okay. Yeah. I'm saying they're bringing in somebody.
Okay,
I'm thinking,
okay.
And I think they're bringing in I'm not saying a superstar, but I think they're bringing in a name.
Okay,
I think they're bringing in a name to insulate, and I think that's that is still for me the number one priority in the offseason is a top four defenseman on this team, preferably a right shot.
Yeah, it would be interesting, but as I said, first of all, on the free agency to pay the dollars to find the right fit.
Well, I think you know, and I've got a list of guys, you know, and I'm not talking about Dougie Hamilton. He's going to be way too much term and way too much money, and probably has zero interest. Although we have a good selection of museums.
Yeah.
Here in Ottawa.
Oh, and we already came up with the whole package there. Right?
Yes, exactly. Right? Exactly.
Yeah.
I brought up the name Adam Larson last week, and I asked Pierre about him, and it sounds like he's going to re-sign in Edmonton based on the reports.
Yeah.
So David Savard is another guy whose name I brought up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Brandon Montour. Again, I'm more speaking of names. I'm not watching these guys play a lot. I'm just talking about guys who have had good reputations, at least for a time, who are right shots, who I think you could get on where you don't have to max out term and you don't have to max out dollars. You know, where you can get, again, a 3-year term at up to $4 million per year.
Yeah.
Not a bank breaker. And again, my whole focus on the team I'm building is I'm looking, everything has to be in place for two and in all probability, 3 years down the road. That's when my window to win is wide open.
Yeah, for
sure. So I'm building.
Sure.
I'm bridging.
Yeah.
To when Jake Sanderson is a top pairing defenseman.
Yeah.
With Thomas Chabot, or certainly a top four, right?
Yeah.
And maybe there's been a Jacob Bernard Docker. Maybe at that point is a top four, right? And Thomas Chabot is already here. And okay, and then you maybe bring in a guy, or maybe one of the other guys is still there.
Yeah.
And you brought in, you know, everybody speaks very highly of Ridly Greig. And that he'll make the NHL sooner rather than later. Great.
Yeah.
And that will start my discussion on Colin White sooner than later and how they need to move along from him as well. I'm just saying that I just need some guys to get me through this next little bit while the team continues to get more and more competitive. Yeah. I don't need to blow my brains out in free agency, but I need some players.
Yeah, no,
I need a couple more players.
Yeah, and here on Zub, which is a fascinating, I don't know if it's, I'd go 5 years, I don't know if it's three and a half, the value of him, and to me is very good. So whatever I do financially to him, I would argue, and not even arguing with it, we're having a beautiful conversation, Mr. Zaitsev is your placeholder. He's got another 3 years, JR, at $4.5 million. He's played better. Am I going
to
then?
I don't have to play him in my top pair just because I'm paying him too much.
No, well, no, I know you don't. But now here's the next spot. Okay, we get to next season. You've decided to sign Savard, which I think is a fit. Mark Brassard has mentioned buddies with Shabbat. They train together. So now my slotting ends up going Savard, Dzub, and Zaitsev at 3 more years at $4.5 million. By Christmas next year, Bernard Docker's good enough to play. Where do you play him? And if Sanderson comes in next year, and you've got Mete, and you've got Brown, and some other players. I so agree with what you're saying. I think right now, though, you would look at it and say, basically, Zaitsev is your placeholder. Zub, you have to re-sign. And at some point next year, I want Bernard Docker to be the three guy on the right side. That's all I would look at.
No doubt in your mind that Artem Zub is a top four defenseman?
Oh, absolutely.
For a team that can win a Stanley Cup?
Yeah, absolutely. Like,
Because 5 years is a lot of term.
Oh, no issue whatsoever. I mean, well, first of all, he's Ottawa's best defender. It's not even close. Like, I mean, is there anybody?
I'm not arguing with you.
Yeah. I wasn't either.
You know me, I'm
saying that as a positive.
I
am, no, the man, and the compliment that you give, JR, he makes everybody better. Like, he made Riley, you know, I think really helped him get a third round pick. He has totally stabilized Brännström. I said for months, I know you won't take him Riley out. He's playing well. Give Brännström a try with Zub. Playing with Gabranson and other people's not going to do anything, or Josh Brown. No, I lock that down, man. The scouting to him, the finding to him, he is such a good player. He's everything I want in a playoff, to be quite honest with you.
All right, that will be,
we didn't even get to White. We'll go to White and the next fella.
Yeah. The next fella would be Philip Gustafson. Yeah. But Colin White is a really interesting one to me as well. Oh, we'll take a break. Come back with that part of the discussion when we return. Good to have Zimmer back with hashtag strong opinions. Share yours as well. Text us at 12-1200. Tweet at us at TSN 1200. As we roll on here on this Monday morning, you're listening to Sports Radio TSN 1200. For that final game on Wednesday, and then we'll see who's jetting off to the World Championship. Sounds like Connor Brown is pretty much a for sure.
Yeah.
Nick Paul, I think, has been asked. I would think that he would like to go. He's not going to get asked to play for Canada too often.
No.
Thomas Chabot, we'll see. I don't think they've updated the health part with him as to whether he goes or not. Brady Tkachuk the other day was a no without saying no because of his contract.
Yeah.
Josh Norris, we'll see. Then I don't think it doesn't sound like Stützle is going for Germany. We'll see with the Russian guys. Like, the Sens could have a whole bunch of guys over at the World Championship.
Yeah, no, anything from Dadanov to Zaitsev to Zub, no, a whole bunch filling the JR. And anybody that's been to good old Riga, Latvia, absolutely gorgeous spot. What's also interesting from Shabbat's standpoint, JR, we've gotten away from the discussion, but a big part of under Steve Yzerman was the leverage of, if you think you want to play in the Olympics, you better go to the World Championships, right? That was something they established to make sure and have better teams. And I just think also for Thomas, for the year that he's had, I'm a huge fan. Wouldn't hurt. Now, they're going to play on the big ice, I think, in Latvia, or at least hybrid. NHL will be Olympic size. Getting with Hockey Canada, being around, understanding you can be a little more of a complete player, wouldn't it not end up hurting them? But like I said, I think there's a lot of guys from the Canadian side. And for Connor Brown, and as you said, for Paul, that chance to continue your season and represent Canada, go over and enjoy it. If you're in the right spot, attended probably 15 of those tournaments, it's just a great experience. It opens up your eyes to the world. And if you feel like you're safe enough, I would hope every player gets that opportunity. And Mark Mathot had a great comment over the weekend, JR. When he went, it was really interesting. It was almost, I kind of relate it to when I played in the World Junior. Mark's comment was, you felt like you belonged, right? Like for Mark, you're kind of looking at yourself and you think you're pretty good. Then you go and play. And then sure enough, he got invited to the Canadian ball hockey summer camp, right? Mm-hmm. With Mike Babcock. Mm-hmm. Like, it's really neat how you go and you kind of like, okay, look around. Wow, I'm actually a pretty good player here. So recommend it to anybody.
Our TSN 1200 Tool and Equipment Store web poll question. DJ Smith is going into the final year of his contract next season. Is he the right coach to lead the Sens to a Stanley Cup win? Yay or nay? This is exactly what I did last night, Hammer, on my personal case. So last night, my results, again, several hundred votes in, was 57-43 yes. This morning, almost same number of votes early on. It's 64-36.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah.
So pretty close. Yeah. Pretty close at the end of the day.
Well,
so
almost two-thirds for him.
Would you consider that to be, and again, we all have recency bias. People are feeling good about the team right now. I almost look at that, to me, that number seems, for what I thought the fan base would think, to what it's actually saying by their votes, to actually be a little on the low side for me.
Oh, you thought it would be more saying yes?
I thought people would be, DJ Smith, to be honest.
They certainly pump his tires on the broadcast. I will say that, and perception can be reality. See, I would have said, and again, this is just my kind of backing off, I would have thought the voting would be completely the reverse, but maybe it's the 4 weeks off, maybe it's kind of the way I see things.
Why would you think things would be different?
Because of what my gut feeling is, but so I'm not in tune with what the fan base feels is my point. So that's all. That's just my gut. But what you're saying, and as the season finishes off, and 7-2-1, and gosh, I think Chris Cuthbert mentioned Saturday night, or Greg Millen mentioned, boy, if DJ Smith should be in conversation for Coach of the Year. So I know, but I'm just saying,
the first time I've heard that.
Yeah, no, I know, and I understand where these things are generated from, but I just in my gut feeling, and again, I'll go back to, hey, he's learned a lot. I want to just fast forward to next fall, want to see the lineup, want to see the system, want to see when it counts. And I'm not minimizing things down the stretch, but I want to see when all of a sudden they're back into a regular division, there's pressure on, which is going to be incredible. And I can't even minimize that. Pierre Dorion and DJ Smith, assumption they're both back from talking to people. First 20 games, it is mega, mega pressure on the general manager and coach. And I want to see how they both perform.
Yeah, 1-8-1, 2-12-1 to start this season. The Sens absolutely buried themselves for any chance at this season, you know, being a potential, even just being in the playoff mix was done after 10 games.
And I'll say COVID, a long time off, okay, part of it. I'll say no preseason games, no doubt a factor, but I'll go back to the general manager's players that he brought in. I'll go back with the deployment of what the lineup was on a coach that was given carte blanche. I'll go back to the system. Then I'll go back to Matt Murray. That created a storm right there that quite simply they never recovered from. And every facet from the three people I mentioned has to be a whole lot better next fall or they're going to be in trouble. And I don't feel like it's that. Probably my biggest wonder next year, JR, is Matt Murray. Like I look at the rest of this, the way the defense is,
for sure.
The forward group, I look at it and say, hey, you give me $7 million goaltending next fall, I'm going to make the playoffs.
So we're going to spend a lot of time over the next few weeks for sure debating Ottawa's protection list in the expansion draft.
Yeah.
And I know some people are going to say, hey, listen, it doesn't matter. They're going to lose a player. Just lose a player. And don't think twice about it. Don't be doing side deals. Don't be this, that, and the other thing. Just lose your player.
Yeah,
and if you look down the list of forwards, you look down the list of defense, again, they can protect 7 forwards, 3 defense. They're not going to lose a player of significance. They're not going to lose a game changer.
No.
If they protect, you know, because there's really only, in my opinion, 4 forwards that you absolutely 100% are protecting.
Yeah.
And that is Brady Tkachuk, Drake Batherson, Connor Brown, and Nick Paul. Those 4 for me are for sures, and after that, everything is open to debate. On defense, obviously Thomas Chabot is a for sure. You got 3 other guys for 2 spots. You've got Zaitsev, you've got Mete, and you've got Josh Brown. So you protect 2 of those 3 guys. Again, however you decide to do it, if you expose Zaitsev because you're hoping they pick him up because of his contract, doubtful.
Yeah.
Maybe you do it that way. If it's Josh Brown, if it's Victor, you know, if it's Josh Brown, he's got a year left in his deal. Victor Mete is going to be making peanuts next year. He's been a good pickup. And then we spent a lot of time debating about the goaltending. Yeah. But again, you're only losing 1 guy at the end of the day.
And here's on the defense chair. Understand, okay, I would protect Zaitsev hands down. Back to what you were talking about. First of all, I think he's your placeholder. He's played a lot of minutes. He's improved. Take Zaitsev off of the defense right now. What does that look like next fall? Now, I know in theory...
That's why I don't think it'll happen.
Well, exactly. No, and he's protected, I would assume as well. You'd protect Mete and then think Josh Brown on a 1-way contract. If he ends up getting taken, no big deal. But for Zaitsev, for the way it's played out, for where they're at next fall and the pressure on, I think there's zero chance that he's left unprotected.
And defense being the weakest part of the team. Or the part of the team that has the least... known going forward, right?
Yeah.
You're putting Jake Sanderson in Penn, and what you have on the team right now and what's to come is still very much in question.
Well,
right?
And you might feel like down the stretch that finally you felt like, and again, I know the coach liked Brown, my feeling is that you feel like with Mete coming in, Branstrom sliding in with Zub, you finally have a bit of stability back there. That's why I feel like opening night, they're going to march back that same 6.
Mm. So Colin White is an interesting one to me. You've got him in your Cup team of the future, ? The third line center on the Ottawa Senators. I look at Colin White and I think, he's a great, first of all, he's a great guy. And I think he's very popular in the dressing room.
Yeah.
I think he's an NHL player. No doubt. If we strip away the contract and everything, Colin White is an NHL player.
Oh yeah,
no
sure.
doubt
for
about
sure.
that.
For sure.
In Ottawa right now, players that have passed him, he is a third-line player going forward. Can we agree on that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And that's with a kid that just came out of college. And
exactly.
Think broader picture here, JR, from a USA standpoint. Now, maybe I missed the news. Like, Josh Norris has been asked to go to the World Championships. I haven't heard anything on Colin White. Have you?
No.
Yeah.
No, I haven't. So, Colin White has 4 more years left at a cap hit of $4.75 million. That's already problematic enough for a third line player whose production does not come to that level, nor given the fact that he's now going to be on the third line, he might get some power play time maybe, but you're not going to be able to juice his numbers because he's not going to get those frontline power play minutes. So his numbers are going to remain probably at best kind of mediocre.
Yeah.
So there's that part of it. And then the final year of his contract, his number goes up to $6.25 million. So in terms of cash out the door, it's actually higher, which, as we know, everybody's looking to save every dollar they can.
Yeah.
I look at Colin White right now, and I think this is the opportunity this year, this offseason, if he still has some value somewhere around the NHL, that I'd be looking seriously at trying to trade him.
Yeah, and I have heard through my rumors that had been discussed earlier in the season, the National Hockey League, just what I've heard. Oh, JR, I'm moving this guy in a heartbeat. Few things on him. It's not going to change. He's 24 years old.
He is what he is.
Everything is processed a little bit slow. He works hard. The other part is that defensively, he's okay. He's terrible on faceoffs. Like he's not even practical in the spot that he's in and the money.
They should have Nick Paul at center and him on right wing, my opinion. Yeah. On a third line with Foreman.
Yeah, no,
they're going to have him here next year.
No, I agree. And again, to where he's slotted, no, I would be. Man, we had Donnie Granato on, and oh, Donnie loves him. My gosh, if he ever stays in Buffalo, I'm on the horn right away. I would try to move past the player. And this would also go back to kind of big picture here. When you look at the Dadonov deal, the extension on Murray, the extension on Tierney that goes up to 4.2, and then you go to White, I'll look at Connor Brown, full marks. I think that's a nice contract. It was a smart move. Zaitsev taking it on. But this will be as you get to Batherson. I mean, ownership has to be looking at this and saying, okay, you guys got out in front of it on Colin White and you gave him the extension. Shabbat. Great player, 8x8. You know, that's still a lot of money. In the case of Shabbat, JR, that was a swing that made no sense at the time that you committed a ton of dollars. How confident is ownership going to be when you say to, hey, Batherson, I want to give a 6 or 7
deal? You mean White. You said Shabbat. You mean White.
Yeah. No, yeah, exactly. White. Yep. Sorry. You know, you took a big swing here, you know, and that you committed a lot of money to a player right now that absolutely you'd want to get out from underneath that because internal budget. And as I say, Tierney right now, he's really struggling to play. Dadonov is only in the lineup because he makes $5 million. And I'm not overblowing this, JR. I have been so disappointed with those two players this year. And again, you made a huge commitment to Murray. That part's going to have to change a whole lot when you start making these decisions to extend. And I'd extend Norris. I'd extend Batherson, Tkachuk. But, you know, but when this came on White, everyone was just kind of like, okay. Even the Dave Poulins of the world that were on the outside were like, man, I don't think I've seen enough of a sample size. And I don't want to hear again that he's going to have a good summer. You know, I mean, he's had good summers, okay? You know, and he's a hard-working, nice fella. He is not going to be a top six forward in the National Hockey League.
No. So I guess the question is, if they decide to, and they can't end up getting any kind of value that they want, whatever the value they would put on Colin White, would you expose him in the expansion draft with the potential of losing him for nothing? The upside being you're out from under his contract.
In a heartbeat. You talk about value. I would be thrilled if I could get rid of that contract right now. So no, not a chance. If I had any chance, I would even sweeten the pot to have Seattle take him, Jerry.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I'm not fearful of that contract right now. I mean, in a three spot's making $4.8 million bucks?
Now, a couple of things on the contract has been pointed out, and Lloydie was one of the people that pointed out to me. He is now still young enough that that if you went another year with Colin White and just to see if there was some light that went off, or even if you just want him to kind of pad out your lineup next year, to kind of as you continue to ascend, at the end of next year, you can still buy him out at that point for one-third of his money because he's still young enough.
Yeah.
So that is an option if you want to keep him around for one more year beyond this. So there is that part of it as well, potentially on White.
Yeah, and as long as you're confident to go to ownership a year from now and say, hey, got a stroke of check here on a guy that I was bullish on, maybe one-third of, but one-third of whatever the $20 million remaining on the contract, still a lot of dough.
Yeah, well, at that point, we're down to 3 years, right?
Yeah.
At that point, it's about $14 million, so it's a third, so it's $5 million be over six. It's less than $1 million.
Yeah,
it's for 6 years.
Yeah,
it is. And listen, and counting every dollar in every organization in the NHL now. Yeah. I think I did the money at $894.
Okay,
I believe.
Yeah.
So it's still $900,000 a year for 6 years.
Yeah.
If you wanted to buy him out.
Yeah, and I'd also and so you know again you can talk yourself into and agree with what Lloydie's saying. I would agree kind of on the finance, got to get it to the floor. But I think if you're an accomplished hockey man, when you point back to his entire body work, and from the time he turned pro, JR, just being so underwhelmed by him, and then he had the Stone time, and then when Stone left, I mean, every darn thing points to the fact that it ain't happening. Do you know what I mean? Like, I know on other players, and I understand that, but you know, for me, if there is that opportunity to get out from underneath all of it and not have the headache of a year from now,
yep,
going to your owner on a buyout, then I'd give Seattle a little something else.
I would
move that along. And also, and I know AJ, everyone said it, the Greg guy's a fairly young guy still, but if you feel like, again, that's coming along and you want to extend Norris, you look at where Pinto is at, and maybe you just want to go and do some other things financially.
Yeah. I'll fully admit that when Colin White played at the World Champion or the World Juniors, which was the year that Thomas Chabot, he was playing for the Americans, and he had 7 goals in 8 games or 8 goals in whatever it was, I really thought he was going to be a player.
I thought he was
going to be a big-time player in the NHL, and it's just he's just kind of plateaued. And as I said, he's an NHL player. Yeah, he's just not worth the money that they're giving him.
No,
and it's going to his contract in the last 2 years especially will become very problematic for the Ottawa Senators in terms of keeping other players, because the money is going to get tight here at some point.
Yeah, and for a different circumstance, you almost go back to Ray Emery, right? Like how few times is a young player suddenly turned to where you end up buying him out? And I agree with you on the World Juniors, but man, I'll say this. From the time he turned pro, my Spidey senses have not been good. Like, I just remember watching him and thinking, okay, am I missing something here? Right. Then last year, the excuse was the weight of the contract. Then you get in this year, and you know, you just watch him play. And I'm glad he wasn't hurt the other night, but it's almost like he's accident prone in the sense that he has no feel for the game, JR. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's kind of all over the place, but nowhere when he plays.
All right. Well, we'll
is
get
that the show?
Yeah, that's the show. That's how
anything in the sports and history. Been building that bad boy up forever.
Oh, I know. I got a ton of stuff we didn't get to. Yeah, unfortunately. Glad I spent a lot of time on that yesterday. We'll get to it. We got lots of time. We got a big off season coming up. Lots to get to.
Sure.
Appreciate everybody's feedback today. Great to have Simmer back on the show. Yeah. We're going to be back again tomorrow morning, but stand by. We do need to do another code word. We need another code word, Hammer. Let's get that ready to go. Stand by for that. But Steve Lloyd and Graham Preach standing by with In the Box coming up after 10 o'clock this morning. Lee and AJ are on the drive this afternoon at 2 o'clock. Don't forget, 7 more code words to come in our TSN 1200 Jersey Monday contest. We will return tomorrow morning. Have a great day, everybody.